I've got a question for you. What is the perfect dirt hole? What's the purpose of the dirt hole? Why should it be made by a trapper in a particular fashion? But I want to go back to that first question. What is a perfect dirt hole? How does one reach perfection when making a trap set? The bigger question, I guess, is why does someone want to have perfection with a particular set or a particular lure combination or a particular trapping strategy for a certain time of year? What is the absolute best way we as trappers can do something? Hello guys, my name is Clint Locklear. I'm with Trapping Radio, and we're going to be talking about perfectionism. This is one that I think about quite often. I came across this article, which we're going to be reading and ad-libbing to for the next however long we're together today. And because of the questions that I get on email and the questions that I get on phone and private messages and DMs and all these other things, I can see this, the perception of searching for perfection is really not helping a lot of trappers. It's really not. I've got podcasts where I talk about trapping like a child. I talk about over the years we've been doing this, because we've been doing this podcast for several years, about the cycle of trappers where you start simple because you don't know anything, and then you get super complicated and you get your ass kicked, and then you end up in your older age trapping like a child, having a better time and catching more fur. We've talked about this kind of before, but I'm seeing this in other aspects too. And one of them is some of the questions that I get on business, on ADC, on selling fur, on, you know, all different kind of revenue stream questions. This constant pursuit of perfection. And after we get done today, you're probably going to see I do not fall on the side of perfection. It's not in my nature, so it's not something that I'm probably more of a creative person than I am a conservative person when you're looking at it from a psychological point of view. I'm not the best manager, but I can create. I can create products. I can create marketing. I can create different ways of trapping. I can create and design different tools for trapping. That's the way that I am. But what I'm not is a perfectionist. So I want to get into this today. And if you catch yourself always trying to be perfect out on the trap line, one, you're ruining the experience. Two, you're not helping yourself. And three, you could be making yourself sick. In a realistic form. So that's what we're going to be talking about today on Trapping Radio. I hope you find it interesting. I hope, this is not something that I'm pointing at any individual whatsoever. And if you're with another trapping partner, don't use this to abuse them either. Because just everybody has different personalities, but some seem to be healthier than others. And trapping should be a good thing, and not a stressful thing, and it should be something you enjoy and not something you fret over all the time. Before we get into today's show, I want to thank our sponsors. We have the best sponsors in the trapping industry. They're guys you can count on. They're guys that when you send them money for a product, you get your product on time. You don't have to wait weeks. They're very conscientious on not having stuff on back order the best that they can. Their shipping's good, the price is good, customer service is good, and we've got some of the best ones. The first one I want to mention today is Dunlap Lures. Jeff's a good friend of mine. I talk to him all the time. I've trapped with him. He learned how to make lure from his dad back in the 70s. He's been working on that, tweaking those, coming up with his own. He's got a very good line that you can get all those at F&T, and I think Minnesota Trap Line, but mostly F&T is the one he sells to. So you can't buy directly from Jeff. You have to buy from a dealer. He doesn't do retail because he doesn't want to do shipping. And but it's lure that you can trust. It's quality. We've talked about lure quite a bit, and it let me say this about some lure makers. There's a lot of guys out there that get into lure making because they think they're going to make money, and that's the focus from the very beginning. And those guys never really get to the point where they respect the ingredients, respect what the animal's going to do with it, or respect the trapper that's going to be purchasing their stuff. And they normally have lackluster lures with lackluster results because they don't put the respect and time in that you need, which is the complete opposite of Jeff. He definitely respects it. So if you're looking for a good lure, you give his stuff a shot. Next sponsor is F&T Fur Harvesters. They have everything you need for trapping, hunting with hounds, and predator calling. If you want a paper catalog with all my products in there, me personally, you can get it from F&T. You can also get it from Hilltop. But I don't do paper catalogs. They do, and they do an amazing catalog. And that, not just my stuff, but all the other stuff in there. But they really do. They have pretty much everything you would want as an outdoorsman. They're actually started carrying Tactical Nuke and some of my deer products. I don't know where you find them on there, but because they've been getting beat up by some guys because they want a Tactical Nuke, ordering my other stuff from F&T, and they didn't carry it. So now they're carrying it, but they're just a tremendous company, and they always have been, and supremely honest. Next, we have Oki Cable and Trap out of Oklahoma. Jeb is a full dealer line of trapping supplies. He sells a lot of meat. He sells buckets. He's just always finding things that trappers need, and he's got a good price, and he's good shipping, and somebody you can trust. A lot of years he sells a lot of meat. He does fur buying some years. I don't know if he is this year, but just a great guy. Then we have Funky Trap Tags and Supplies, which is out of Iowa. They're the ones that personally ship my stuff now, so they have all my product up there so I can concentrate on creating instead of shipping. And that's working out very well. They're better at it than I am. And it's just Alan's one of those, if you ever meet Alan, he's your friend forever. And what you'll find out about Alan's not looking at you for what he can get out of you. He's looking at you how he can help you. And that's a rare characteristic today. And we have Wildlife Control Supplies, which is out of Connecticut. They have an amazing lineup of everything that you could ever want for ADC work. I mean, every type of crazy lure and crazy cage and exclusion work. Plus, they have a full line of trapping supplies. They carry a lot of my stuff also. And just great guys to deal with. Super, super professional. So those are our sponsors. Those are the ones that pay the bills, pay for the server, and stuff like that. Some of them are members of our Fur Brigade, which means you get discounts. Like if you order from me with a Fur Brigade discount, you get 10% off. Plus, there's free content on there. And you can get 10% off from Funky Trap Tags and Supplies. Brian from Southern Snares is on there. There's some guys that carry more outdoor stuff that's on there. It's a really cool thing. It's for what you pay for it, you get way more back if you're buying supplies, trust me. And that's the Trapping Radio Fur Brigade. So I want to get into this question. And you know, like what I said earlier, you have kind of different mindsets that people have. I think a lot of it is learned. I think a lot of it can be unlearned. I think a lot of it is nurture, how you're brought up. And some of it probably is nature, just because some people probably lean more this way. Like my wife is more perfectionist than I am. you know, like me being more of a creative person, that's the reason it works better in my business now to have Alan ship for me. He's more of a conservative type person. He's very good at managing. He's very organized. He's all that type stuff, where creative people like myself, that's not really what we do the best at. So me producing a product is up my alley. Me doing all the manager stuff and everything, it's not, because I'm not a perfectionist. And people that do the more manager side of businesses need to be leaning more towards the perfection because of what the customer's expecting. I'm very religious on how tight my lures are. But when it comes to everything else, like invoices and billing and all that, that's just not really my thing. So I do the best I can with that, and then I've got Alan to ship for it, and it works out very well. I also think it's harder for someone to be super successful in anything if you're a perfectionist. Now, that may seem the complete opposite of the common theory of the way that people are, but I'm here to tell you, perfectionists live in a stew of stress because they're trying to do something that there's no way in a world with biological creatures running around and as chaotic as our world is, that everything's going to be perfection. No matter how hard you work, how many hours you work, how much you read about trapping, how much you study trapping, how much you do all that, it's never ever gonna be perfection. And if you're a perfectionist, you stew in the anxiety and the stress of perfection. And there's an old saying that if you can't handle stress and you're not gonna be successful. What happens with perfectionists is they get stress burnout. Stressful is dangerous. You know, it's pretty much proven if you want to live longer, then you need to be less stressful. For a perfectionist, that seems crazy, because how can that be possible? If you want to live longer, you've got to be able to roll with the punches. Well, that's the complete opposite of a perfectionist, because everything's got to be in complete order at all times. Every single line of a web page has got to be perfect. The graphics has got to be perfect. Your sets have got to be perfect. The lure you use on a particular day at a certain time with a certain type of humidity has got to be perfect. Now, what you're doing is you're killing yourself with stress. So I'm going to be going through an article, and it's by the BBC. And it's the dangerous downsides of perfection. Because what I see in trappers more in the last probably 10 years than before that is all the information that we have, as good as a lot of it doesn't compute the way that a computer would come up with the best way of doing something. Because me trapping in Tennessee, where it's muddy and wet, is different from someone trapping in Wisconsin, where it's frozen and 6 foot of snow. It's different from someone that's trapping out in the western part, where you may have snow, but it's very dry. You've got people that trap in high urban populations, and you have them that trap in low urban populations. You have some that have higher animal populations, some have lower animal populations. The weather's completely different. The laws are completely different. And we're getting information from all these different sources, which is so freaking different. We're trying to come up with a perfect formula for our own personal trapping because we want to be the best at it we can get. And I understand that. But you're asking for something that's not real. And if you're striving for something that's not real, it's going to cause stress and anxiety, because you're going to realize it's not real, no matter how hard you push for it. The dangerous downside of perfection. Many of us believe perfection is a positive, but researchers are finding that it's nothing short of dangerous, leading to a long list of health problems, and that's on the rise. one of my earliest memories, I'm drawing. I don't remember what the picture was supposed to be, but I remember the mistake. My marker slips. An unintentional line appears and my lip trembles. The picture has long since disappeared, but the feeling of deep frustration, even shame, stays with me today. From someone that does art, I've actually done a few paintings since being on this, stuck at home, and the governor in Tennessee says my business has to close because apparently lures are not essential. And I've got way more time on my hands because I'm not going anywhere. So I started painting again. And my wife is more of a perfectionist than I am. So the few times that I've tried to get her to do some stuff like that with me, it's very stressful for her to do artwork because it's got to be perfect. It's got to be exactly the right shades. It's got to be completely in proportion and stuff like that. She finds painting or drawing super stressful. I find it relaxing. But you know, I'm not looking for perfection either. But the same thing happens with us trappers. You're trapping, you're working hard, you're fighting the elements, you're doing all this stuff, and lo and behold, things don't go the way that you want it to. You have some misses at some sets. You have coyotes that are walking by your sets. They're coming from a different angle than you thought they should be. And you don't really remember that much about the day, just like this lady's talking about when she made a bad line on an art project as a kid. You don't remember all the other stuff that happened that day. You focus on the misses. You focus on the one that was 1/4 inch away from hitting your pan. And you just brood on it. And it just keeps with you. And at night, you're trying to figure out, how can I make that? So you're looking for perfection with an art form of trapping, because that's what it is, that there is never going to be perfection. Over years of experience and allowing your brain to use that experience and flood all of that data over all of that time, you get better, but it's never perfect. The best trapper, if there is such a thing in the country, still has misses. Still has animals walk past their sets. Still, forgets the rules about the weather and gets stuff blown out. Picks the wrong location sometimes. And I'm talking about the theoretical best trapper in the world, whoever that could be. Still happens to them. But one of the things I've learned from taking a lot of instruction that bothered me when I was younger, that I understand the value of it as I'm older and I have way more experience in this game, is the better trappers like Johnny Thorpe, Bill Nelson, Red O'Hearn, Craig O'Gorman, after reading some books from some older books from people, some of the bigger name trappers that we know about, what you don't find are perfectionists. They just don't believe that. Because, like at the beginning, my question was, what's the perfect dirt hole? There isn't one. The reason I know there isn't one, because I've taken photographs, which I've got books of, that I've tried to go out and perfect natural looking dirt holes. The problem with that is, even the most natural, which should be, I'm talking like coyote diggings from coyotes. I can emulate that, but they all look different. So which one is perfect? Groundhog or badger diggings. I can show you pictures of 30 different ones that look totally 30 different ways. The dirt's in a different place, the pattern looks different, the hole's a different shape, everything like that. There is not a perfect dirt hole. But I want you to be honest with yourself. When you go on forums and Facebook and buy videos and look at YouTube videos and all that stuff, you're trying to find the perfect size, the perfect shape, the perfect depth, the most natural looking, the most non-natural looking, if you're talking about bobcats, all of this stuff that's like a unicorn. Some people can believe in it. That doesn't mean it's really real. It's a unicorn. It's a figment of our imagination that's not real. Okay, I'm going to go back to the article. More often than I'd like to admit, something surprisingly inconsequential will cause the same feeling to rear its head again. Something as small as accidentally squashing a flower I was bringing my boyfriend's family for Christmas can tumble around in my mind for several days, accompanied by occasional voices like, "How stupid," and "You should have known better," falling short of a bigger goal, even when I know achieving it would be near impossible, can temporarily flatten me. When an agent told me she knew I was going to write a book someday, but that particular idea I pitched her didn't suit the market, I felt deflated and gut-punching the way and went way beyond disappointment. The negative drowned out the positive. "You're never going to write a book," my initial internal voice said. "You're not good enough." That voice didn't care that this directly contradicted what the agent actually said. See, this can be taken two ways, what she's saying. I think this is genius from what our topic is. She wanted to write a book that a market was not ready for. There just wasn't a market for it. It was too niche. But she said, "You're going to write a book, but this one's just not right for the market at this time." What did the perfectionist hear? "You're not good enough. I'm never going to write a book." Even though that is not what the agent told her. Now, see, I've talked to several guys that have ideas for trapping products over the years, several. I don't do it as much anymore because of I don't want whatever it is they're thinking in my head. So if something comes out of me in 3-4 years and it's somewhat similar or it somewhat uses the same principle, I don't want to have them coming back and saying, "You stole my idea." So now I don't listen to ideas like that. But I've told people basically what this agent has said. You know, what you're talking about will work. It may be too expensive for the market. I don't really see a need for that in the market, but if you want to play around with it and you know, see if I'm wrong, by all means do. And you can hear the other person on the phone that was so excited about this idea. I'm looking at strictly from a market point of view, the way this agent was about the book, understanding how trappers are with prices, understand manufacturing, understand all the different things that I've had to deal with when I've come up with products. But the perfectionist, they just drowned themselves in this, "Well, I didn't have a good idea. I'm not good enough to do this. I can't do this. And so I'm never going to do this." But what it is, it should be a learning experience. Even if you come out with a bad product, let's say you're coming out with a product you can make in your shop. You think trappers are going to really want it. You spend a couple of grand, even if it's 10 grand on it, and you find out that it didn't work. Well, if you listen to the customers, they're going to tell you why they're not interested in it. Dude, that's the cheapest, best education of 10 grand you've ever spent in your life, more than you're going to get in college. Now you know why they're not interested in it, but if you listen in between the lines of most trappers when I tell you why they don't want something, they're telling you exactly what they do want. But you can't hear it. If you have this self-loathing perfectionism drowning you out all the time, it's a learning experience. Now you can come back, you might modify what you're doing, you may come back with a totally different product. You don't know how many people I have talked to over the years, whether it be with trapping or some other type industry, they tried to start a revenue stream and it didn't work, and because their one didn't work, they don't think they can do revenue streams. And it's sad, because they're smart people. They got great ideas. They just picked one that wasn't very good at the time. You know, coming out with something right now for certain aspects of trapping is not going to work. 5 years, it may be awesome. Like when I did my howtotrapit.com, where you get to stream all of my videos, Randy's and Scott's videos, for $199, saves you, I don't know, $200-$300 instead of buying them individually. 10 years ago, that would not have worked. I had the idea back then, but the technology and the acceptance of that during the market was not right. Was it a bad idea? No. It just wasn't the right time. Since then, I've had a lot of people order the $199 package for the simple reason that it's such a good deal that they're looking for information. It works for me because I've already made them. The DVD market selling individually has pretty much died. I mean, it's just hanging on by its fingernails. That for a business opportunity for me, it worked now. It wouldn't have worked 10 years ago, and it may not work 10 years from now. There may be something totally different. So if I would have started this 10 years ago when most people didn't have computers to be able to stream that and didn't have internet good enough to stream that, it would have been a failed business idea. And I could have sat back and said, how stupid was I? I should have known better. What an idiot. And see, those particular words this lady's saying in her article, I've heard trappers speak those over and over and over again. You're not an idiot. You're not stupid. And how in the world would you know better until you tried and figured out it didn't work? That's the thing about perfection. It takes no prisoners. If I've struggled with perfection, I'm far from alone. The tendency starts young. It's becoming more common. Thomas Curran and Andrew Hill's meta-analysis of rates of perfection from 1989 to 2016. The first study to compare perfectionism across generations found a significant increase among more recent undergrads in the U.S., U.K., and Canada. In other words, the average college student last year was much more likely to have perfection tendencies than a student in the 1990s. See, from my age, being a perfectionist in 1980, that's just what in the world that we lived in. We didn't have the stress then either of it. There was a phrase when I was growing up all the time, good enough for the government means it's good enough. See, a perfectionist can't handle good enough. That's the reason a lot of perfectionists have trouble in business. They want perfection. A lot of trappers have trouble with trapping because they're striving for perfection. And it's becoming, obviously, more common than it used to be. As many as 2 in 5 kids in adolescence are perfectionists, says Kate Russman, who researches child development and perfectionism at West Virginia University. We're starting to talk about how it's heading towards an epidemic and public health issue. A rise in perfection doesn't mean each generation is becoming more accomplished, it means we're getting sicker, sadder, and even undermining our own potential. See, the, you know, fly by your bootstraps, the way that most businesses start, you can't do that with perfection. You just can't do it. When you start out trapping, even your first 5-10 years, it's by your bootstraps, man. You ain't got enough information in your head yet of real world experience. You can shove it full of all of the written and video content you want to. Until you go out and do it repeatedly, you just don't have the data in your brain yet to do what you see other trappers doing that's been doing it for 15, 20, 30 years. I don't care how much you study, but you can go do it, have a good time, and catch a bunch of stuff as you're building up that database. Perfectionism, after all, is ultimately a self-defeating way to move through the world. It's beat on excruciating irony. Making and admitting mistakes is a necessary part of growing and learning and being a human. It also makes you better at your career and relationships and life in general. By avoiding mistakes at any cost, which trappers try to do all the time and they never get the experience because of it, a perfectionist can make it harder to reach their own lofty goals. But in the drawback of perfectionism, it isn't just that it holds you back from being your most successful, productive self. Perfectionist tendencies have been linked with a laundry list of clinical issues: depression, anxiety, even in children, self-harm, social anxiety disorder. Now, I'm going to stop right here. What happens when someone posts a very basic questions online today? They get made fun of. What does that do? Social anxiety disorder. It builds up. Everything becomes an argument. Every perfectionist is trying to prove their perfection over the other perfectionist. When you listen to guys that have been doing it for 20, 30 years, 40, 50, you don't find very many hints of perfection. You try it. You learn from it. You grow from it. You figure out what worked and what didn't. You add it to the next batch of bootstraps trying to figure stuff out. Social anxiety disorder, guys, that's one downfall of the way that we do social media today. I got a word here I can't spell. I got obsessive compulsive disorder, binge eating, anorexia, bulimia, eating disorders, post-traumatic stress disorder, chronic fatigue syndrome, insomnia, because you can't sleep at night because you're trying to figure out why you missed that coyote, hoarding, another word I can't spell, chronic headaches, and most damning of all, even early mortality and suicide rates. It's something that cuts across everything in terms of psychological problems, says Sarah Egan, a senior research fellow at Certain University in Perth, who specializes in perfectionism. Who knew there's such a thing? Eating disorders and anxiety. There aren't that many other things that can do this. There are studies that suggest that the higher the perfectionism is, more psychological disorders you're going to suffer. Culturally, we often see perfectionism as a positive. Trappers do. Hunters do. Turkey hunters, fishermen. Guys, since I moved on the river, I've watched, because I observe things, I've watched the way different guys fish. There's guys that catch fish. Well, there's two groups, it seems like. I'm definitely in this first group. I try to figure out what the fish are doing. I may play around with different baits. I may play around with different depths of water. I'm gonna play around with different scents, maybe chumming, maybe this, that, and the other. And if I don't have a good day, which I'm not that good of a fisherman, dude, it's an awesome day. And then you have this other group, the perfectionist. When I see them, I almost feel sorry for them. I can tell them from 100 yards away, because we live on a point on the Tennessee River that stands out as far as going into the water. So just like trappers hunt, you know, trap the edge, fishermen also hunt the edge because there's more wildlife on the edge than there is anywhere else. Learned it in permaculture, learned it in trapping, learned it in fishing. Seems to be a basic rule of life. The edge has more life. So you got the guys that go out there, they fish hard, they enjoy it, they laugh a lot, they don't seem to get that upset if it's a bad day. Then this other group comes along. And they normally have the latest and greatest, badass, fastest bass boats you've ever seen. I mean, we watch tournaments come by here. These dudes are in freaking flak vest and helmets because if they crash going that fast, they're going to tear their body limbs off to get to this, the perfect place before everybody else. And then they stop. And eventually they'll come back up where we're at and they're going to see our point. And I can see them out of my office or I can see them when we're outside. And you can tell by their body language, they haven't got the right lure on there. And I'll be damned if they don't have 15 different rods completely reloaded with all this different stuff, and they make three casts and no bite, so they actually drop it down like they're like doing some type of speed drill on a combat shooting course, and they snatch the other one up and they sling it out there as fast as they can. They get four or five casts, they throw it down, they grab the next one, and they go to, I never see them really catching any fish. I'm sure they do. I've never seen one of those type fishermen off our point actually catch a fish. But they're acting the same way that we as trappers can act about how our sets look, where they're at, what's in them, all the other things that should be going in your mind. But you're doing it, you're looking for that perfect lure for that perfect day at that perfect time at that perfect place. It's a fish. If it's hungry and something moves in front of it that looks like it could be edible, it eats it. But these guys that fish this way, for one, you know they're exhausted at the end of the day. And what they're looking for probably doesn't actually exist anyway. Perfection, I don't think, is a positive. Even though culturally this article's saying we often see perfection as a positive. Even saying you have perfectionist tendencies can come off as a coy compliment to yourself. It's practically a stock answer to what's your worst trait question in a job interview. Past employers, now you know I wasn't just being cute. This is where perfection gets complicated and controversial. Some researchers say there is an adaptive and a healthy perfectionism characterized by having high standards, motivation, and discipline versus a maladaptive or unhealthy version when your best never seems to be good enough and not meeting a goal frustrates you. So that's kind of what I was saying. When it comes to trapping, there's a healthy type of, you're trying to get better. You're trying to learn. You're gaining experience. And you adapt that with a healthy perfection. Yeah, you got high standards. You're motivated. You're working hard and you're disciplined. But the unhealthy version, you're never going to be your best because it's not good enough to meet whatever goals you gave yourself and it frustrates you. In one study, more than 1,000 Chinese student researchers found that gifted students were more perfectionist in the adaptive ways. Real perfectionists struggle in everything, guys. They do. Unless there's a set block of rules, there's time requirements, and everything is locked in concrete, perfectionists have a hard time. the unhealthy version. The adaptive people, just like this is saying, they use the motivation, the high standards, to learn from. Maladaptive, which is the unhealthy, perfectionists, on the other hand, were more likely to be non-gifted. And while research shows the maladaptive attributes like beating yourself up for mistakes, how many times have we trappers done that? Feeling like you can't live up to your parental expectations, or the Facebook mob, or the Instagram mob, or the forum mob's expectations, makes you more vulnerable to depression. Some other studies show that adaptive aspects like striving for achievement have no effect at all, or may even protect you. So what that's saying is, if you're adaptive, well, you're not you're the healthy type of perfectionist, striving for achievement doesn't really have that much of effect on you, because it's not super stressful. And it can even protect your health-wise. But that isn't always the case. Simply having high personal standards have been linked to suicide. Indation, I don't know what that word means. For example, even if there's sometimes you may be upside, there may be upsides to perfectionist thinking, there are minor and researchers argue is misunderstood. In 2016 meta-analysis, 43 students of perfection and burnout at the Hill and Curtin found that athletes, employees, and students experienced either a tiny or no benefit from aspects like having very high personal standards compared to people who didn't have them. People who expressed more maladaptive perfection, on the other hand, experienced significantly more burnout. So while a lot of trappers don't stay in trapping because they're trying to figure out the perfection that doesn't exist, they get burnout and stressed out. There's been some suggestion that in some cases perfectionism might be healthy and desirable based on 60 odd studies that were done. We think that's a misunderstanding, says York St. John's University Hill. We're working hard, being committed, diligent, and so on. There are desirable features, but for the perfectionist, those are really a symptom or a side product of what perfectionism is. Perfectionism isn't about high standards, it's about unrealistic standards. Perfectionism isn't a behavior, it's a way of thinking about yourself. In fact, many researchers say that factors often dubbed healthy perfectionism, like striving for excellence, aren't actually perfectionism at all. They're just conscientiousness, which explains why people with these tendencies often have different outcomes in studies. Perfectionism, they argue, isn't defined by working hard or setting high goals. It's a critical inner voice. Take the students who work hard and get poor marks. If she tells herself, "I'm disappointed, but it's okay, I'm still a good person overall," that's healthy. See, why do trappers put so much of their identity into the ability to not have a coyote walk past their set, that they make it personal with their own self-identity? See, that's not healthy. Because what this is saying, you're still a cool dude, man. You're out trapping. You missed one. Big deal. Rock on. If the message is, "I'm a failure, I'm not good enough," that's perfectionism. The inner voice critiques different things for different people: work, relationships, tidiness, fitness. On other tendencies may differ greatly from someone else's. It can take someone who knows me well to pick up on them. When I messaged my partner I was writing this story, he immediately sent back a long line of laughing emojis. As a result, perfectionism and non-perfectionists might look at the same for a short period of time for a distance. But when you get up close and observe them over time, conscientious people have more adaptive ways of coping with things that go wrong. Perfectionists feel every bump in the road. They're quite stress sensitive. Perfectionists can make smooth sailing in a storm, a brief ill wind, into a Category 5 hurricane. At the very least, they perceive it that way. And because The ironies never end. The behaviors of perfectionists adapt. Ultimately, actually, do make them more likely to fail. Faced with failure, perfectionists tend to respond more harshly in terms of emotions. They experience more guilt, more shame. Says Hill, they also experience more anger. See, I've been with trappers before, trappers that you know their names of, and the weather's bad, and we still try to catch stuff, and our catch is down, and I'm okay with it. We try to put out more sets, we try to get creative, we try to overcome, but it's not something I'm going to let get me down. And I've watched trappers have meltdowns because their catch isn't what they thought it should be. I've also been with other trappers that trapping in areas that we thought there were more animals than there were, and the catch is down, and it's kind of like, oh well, nothing we can do about it. We'll just keep working. Maybe we'll try something new. Maybe we'll get some new property, you know, or something like that. But it's not like, it doesn't destroy their inner self because it's not happening. They're not getting angry. Perfectionists, they give up more easily. They have quite avoidant copying tendencies when things can't be perfect. Quite avoidant. Let me get turn this off, guys. Sorry. Let me turn the sound down or they're going to keep calling. Okay. They have avoidant copying. They avoid copying tendencies which when things can't be perfect. That, of course, hinders them from being very successful that they want to achieve. In his 60-plus studies focused on athletes, for example, Hill found that a single biggest predictor of success in sports is simply practice. But if practice isn't going well, perfectionists have a tendency to stop. How many times have we seen that in trapping? Catch isn't going right. Trapper gets mad, throws his hands up, pulls his trap, sits and broods around the house. See, this is something, I know people think that they are what they are. And I don't believe the human mind is that freaking delicate. I don't think that we're not able to change. If you decide that you're not going to change, then you won't change. If you decide that you're going to change, you're going to change. It makes me think my own childhood, peppering with avoiding or starting and quitting almost every sport there was, especially if there was an audience watching. In fact, multiple studies have found correlation between perfectionism and performance anxiety, even in children as young as 10. The trouble is that the perfectionist's performance is intertwined with their self, or their sense of self. When they don't succeed, they just don't feel disappointed about how they did. They feel ashamed about who they are. Ironically, perfectionism then becomes a defense tactic to keep shame at bay. If you're perfect, you won't fail. And if you never fail, there's no shame. Holy cow. You want to know why younger people don't like trapping? Sometimes. Is because the parents are bringing them up to be perfect. I'm going to read that again. The trouble is that perfectionists, performance is intertwined with their sense of self. When they don't succeed, they just don't feel disappointed about how they did. They feel shame about who they are. Ironically, perfectionism then becomes a defense tactic to keep shame at bay. If you're perfect, you never fail. And if you fail, there's no shame. As a result, the pursuit of perfection becomes a vicious cycle. Impossible. Man, that dude's tenacious on getting through the phone. As a result, the purpose of perfection becomes a vicious cycle, and because it's impossible to be perfect, it's a fruitless one. You can read this article. It goes on to all different things. Perfectionism is also dangerous, and it goes into all these things of anxiety and stress. Mental health problems aren't just caused by perfectionism. Some of the troubles can lead to perfectionism. And it's saying, you know, this is a word trappers don't use very much, but self-compassion. One of the most robust protections against anxiety and depression is self-compassion. So when you're out trapping and things are going sideways and you feel like you're getting your butt kicked and animals are laughing at you and your buddies online are laughing at you and they want to know where your big catch is at and all this, that, and that. Dude, it's not that you use a type of excuse of why it's not working. You just don't make it you. Because you're having a bad day doesn't mean you're a bad person. Because you're having a bad trapping week doesn't mean you're a bad trapper. It's just trapping. And self-criticism, which perfectionists are so good at, predicts depression. It goes into all these things of problems with alcohol and binge eating and suicide. If you think you're perfectionist, I would definitely read this. If you think perfectionism is something that makes you a better trapper, I beg to differ. Good enough, most of the time, guys, is good enough. My dirt hole concepts are pretty simple. I want it natural-ish looking. I want it deep enough that the animal can't steal from me very quickly, so I get his paws on the pan very much. I'm not worried if the hole's 3 inches round or 10 inches round. I want to have something in there that they want to eat on, something there that's going to draw them to it. I want to kind of guess, which is really how I trap. It's not a formula, so I'm guessing on how the coyote is going to use the terrain to come up to it, and I'm wrong a lot of times. No problem. I got more data to work with now. We're rocking. I'm smarter than I was before I missed the coyote. Woo-hoo! It's better, man. But a perfectionist chews on that miss forever. You can change if you decide to change. But if you're thinking that you're one of these guys that's searching for perfection and trapping, I would do some research on this. And again, this article is from the BBC, and the name of it is The Dangerous Downsides of Perfectionism. If you Google that, The Dangerous Downsides of Perfectionism, you can read this whole article. If you've got children that are showing signs of if they don't succeed at something, it makes them a bad person, you need to get on that crap immediately. You need to disassociate them from being perfect, from being a bad person. Or you're probably going to end up with somebody that's going to be anxious, that's going to have, could possibly have mental problems, going to have eating problems, going to have health problems, and is going to live shorter because of this. See, trapping shouldn't be an event that people stress out so much about that it can actually make them unhealthy. That's crazy. Trapping is awesome. It is great to be outside. To be out in the woods, putting in a set when the world's coming alive, that should not be stressful. That is magnificent to be part of. But missing all of the cool stuff that happens when you're in the woods because you missed a coyote and you're slinging your stuff in the back of the truck and you're kicking your trap closed. Dude, you're missing the point of being out there. Your overreaction to a miss does not make you a better trapper. Trying to figure something out to use on the next one can make you a better trapper. And half the time, I would say 50% of the time, you're going to be wrong on what you think happened and why you missed anyway, and that's okay. It doesn't make you a dumb person. It just makes you human. So keep all this in mind. The next time you're out trapping, hunting, fishing, trying to run a business, coming up with a product, all of that. Maybe if you're one of these type people, you need to put little notes around, like on your computer and your workstation and your trapping shed and the window where you shave. Perfectionism is not a positive. Some little saying that'll just keep that in your mind. So when all that starts building, you can consciously fight against it. Because if you're looking for the perfect way to trap, guys, it doesn't exist. The best way to trap does not exist. Good enough and enjoying yourself is good enough. As your experience grows, your catch will grow. As you travel around a little bit more, your experience will grow. And you're going to screw stuff up all the time. I do. Bad trap placement, wrong type of lure for the time of year, because the animals are telling me that they're not interested. So I switch. No big deal. Go somewhere where there's a bunch of mange. Or you can keep catching mangy cows. You can go somewhere else. How you handle the adversity of a trap line is going to be the difference whether you enjoy trapping or not. And if you don't enjoy it, you're not going to do it very long. But if you enjoy it, it's a cool ride. But only if you understand it's not hooked to if you're a good person or not if you miss a coyote. Weird show, I know. Hopefully, there's some of you out there this helps. Hopefully, if you're one of these people that has these tendencies to always beat yourself up if something will go wrong, I would start doing some research on your own. You don't have to go to a doctor. You don't have to see someone in a white coat. You can talk to yourself and do some research where you can start working on this so you can enjoy life a little bit better. That was the goal of this show, and I hope it worked. I'll talk to y'all next time.